the races with Steve Pick on SiriusXM Radio.
Barrels black and east tides, colors burn into my eyes. Life for you shades gray. Help me find my way. Lost, never found. Hide your secrets, settle down. I am young and I am naive. Tell me something I will believe. Take me far away from the city so okay. Get away till I was 18. Only saw colors on a TV screen. Skin jeans and sunglasses. Fashion statement for the masses. What you do makes me sick. Overhype and generic. Shine like the sun. Spread your word to everyone. I ask you where people die. You said we all have design. Slide into the sea. Landslide coming down on me.
We're back at the races, back at Monmouth Park. And kind of exchanging notes. I kind of threw Frank a curveball because I think we're going to have him on the phone instead of live and in person. So we'll get Frank. We're still chasing down Julie Crone. And yesterday I started to give you the announcement about the NHC qualifier that I was sort of drafted. And I am kind of excited. For really the last two or three years, we've been threatening to do a beat Bic NHC qualifier, and here it is. It starts tomorrow, and what I did was I picked the San Clemente as the first race for the contest, just to assure that no cancellation issues. So the San Clemente will be first, and I think I'm probably going to come back and do the Wicker. Most likely on Sunday, I'll make that decision and make a call on a horse. What you basically do is you sign up. It's going to be run at horseplayers.com, and they got the interface. You make a selection, you register, make a selection. You beat me just one time, and if you aren't a tour member, basically this is a qualifier for a end of summer. Bigger contest, probably 10 or 12 races, to win one seat to the NHC. And there is a really pretty cool sideline prize, which is if you are not a tour member and you pick a horse, you beat me, you can join the tour for $1. So it's a $49 savings. Can't beat that. Right? That's pretty cool. I thought that was a pretty neat little wrinkle that was added. And so if you go to ntra.com/beatbic, all the details, and I'll keep tweeting out the links and all the stuff. But I thank Michelle Ravencraft and Holly Short and Keith Shamblin and everybody. And somebody's going to represent the show at Vegas this year. And I've got to cure myself of saying the Treasure Island. Bally, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Jason Beam pitching in, because it's been so many years we've been saying, and really the only place I've been for the NHC. So Bally's the new home of the NHC. So somebody's going to represent at the races at the NHC. Frank Miramati standing by. And Frank, I that's my fault. I should have said, I'll see you at the track, but happy just to hear your voice.
It's great to hear your voice. You know I'm very shy about these in-person interviews, so I have to hide behind the telephone.
Yeah, that's you. That's you, Mr. Reticent.
Timid. Do you remember Wicker, by the way, the racehorse? What a great horse he was. He was very game. He ran against the Bart. Bobby Frankel had him. Edmund A. Gann. Those were the days.
Absolutely. And when we get closer to the Travers, I'll have Siaka come on the show and tell a great Bobby Frankel, Edmund Gann story about Medaglia d'Oro and winning the Travers. It was very funny the celebrating that night with Bobby made me think of that right away. Well, in the meantime, Frank, here we are on the doorstep again this year, and just had Jerry Bailey and Randy Moss. We talked about the race. What number Haskell is this for you that you're calling?
This is number 5. Started with American Pharoah in 2015.
That's not a bad place to start.
No, it's a perfect. It was a beautiful thing. It was the third time I got to call him, and I was glad he won. It was beautiful, and there was a lot of excitement and energy in the crowd, and understandably so. What a beast he was.
Well, we obviously have the heat, the weather backdrop. We're getting, you know, we're getting all the details about plans and contingencies for keeping the horses cool and so forth. What are we going to do to keep you cool up in that booth?
Well, I mean, look, let's face it. These diets haven't worked, so I'm basically going to sweat a little bit of it off. What can you do? It certainly hasn't come from exercise and good eating, so I'm going to let the sun do its job.
I love it. Some thoughts about the summer and, you know, getting back here and three weeks have been back.
I've been back and fully entrenched, and it's great to be here. The nicest people in the world, great management team. We are all a big family, and we're all friends, and we have one goal in common, which is to preserve the greatness of Monmouth Park. You have to give a tip of the hat to Dennis Drazen for what he has done within every regard, but particularly with getting sports wagering legalized and the way that he has just basically dedicated so much of his time and energies into what is best for Monmouth Park's horsemen. And the horsemen run the track, and they couldn't have a better leader. And I know that the Monmouth Park Sportsbook is helping the track in every way, and it's just it's a beautiful thing because this track is a treasure, and it's an honor to work with the team that's been here for so long. I've been here 5 years now, and I'm a newbie in this place. I mean, everyone has been here a long time, and the track is great, and we're going to have a huge crowd again and a lot of excitement and a fantastic 14 race card. We have to be very excited about this, and we are.
Well, looking forward to tomorrow, certainly. Some thoughts about the race. Let's start with the Haskell, because it's a fascinating lineup. Six horses that essentially want to be first or second and sit close, and then Dale Romans and Everfast to come with a late run. I mean, what do you expect here when the gates open?
I would think Maximum Security is going to be sent hard from the outside. That would be my expectation. That's what he's done throughout his career. He's a fast horse. They're not going to waste any time. They're going to want to go out there. And I think a lot of times when you look at horses that you see a bunch of speed horses, you just have to understand that they're not all going to go out there. And that there's, I don't know if the word is classier, but whatever it is, there's a certain level of speed. And Maximum Security has that ability to take the lead away from any one of these whenever he wants in the early stages. The question is he, you know, this is a big question. He just faced the first time that he's been caught in a race. We all know he got disqualified at the Kentucky Derby, but he's always finished first. And he was run down. He did stumble at the start, but he was run down fair and square last time by King for a Day, who is a colt that when you look at his past performance lines, he debuted in a race no one was going to beat Complexity, a very fast horse for Chad Brown that was touted from Maine to Spain, and he won easily. And since that time, the only loss King for a Day took was in the Kentucky Jockey Club when the connections absolutely loved him and were stunned that he was defeated, albeit at 9-2. Comes back fresh, wins, comes back, beats Maximum Security. I think the mile and the eighth is right up his alley. His horse is going to be very tough in here. I would not throw him out at all. Maximum Security will be heavily favored. And he, look, this is Jason Service in the national spotlight trying to basically quiet some skeptics. And he's going to, I mean, if it's up to the way Jason Service would like to see this happen, he'd like to see a performance reminiscent of his Florida Derby romp in this race. So all guns are blazing. Bob Baffert sends in Mucho Gusto. I called his race in the affirmed. I was extremely impressed with the way he blew Roadster away. Roadster was no factor against him that day. Now, Bob did mention afterward that Roadster needed to put on some weight, but still, the way he rated Kindly, he'll be rating again, I believe. Then there's Jovia, who I think is definitely in a very, very tough spot here, but look, Greg Sacco's dad was a leading trainer here in 1962. This horse is undefeated over the track. He's going to try his best. The speech that Carlos Guerrero gave at the press conference was fantastic. I really became a fan of it. And I didn't even know what the guy looked like. I've been watching his horses for a long time, but he was so passionate, just talking about everything about this horse and his development. And then, you know, it's when you get to see stories like that of D. Curry coming into this race, it's warm. It's what this game is all about. There's so many different storylines here. It's such a special race. And then Dale Romans will try to mow him down. just like he mowed down my second place hope, Owendale, in the Preakness in the last jump. So he'll be trying to do it here, and he gets the perfect pace set up. I got to believe this pit, the track is going to be sizzling fast, and that being up close is going to be to your advantage. And so I do not like Everfast one bit, despite the pace setup.
It's interesting you say that. Randy Moss. Randy's going to pick him tomorrow, and he's looking for a collapse scenario. I kind of agree on the idea that he could clunk up and you know, he'd be a candidate, you know, for a third, fourth, and you keep, you know, a couple of horses up in the couple of, you know, first, second slots, kind of a reverse tri-key concept. I agree. I can't really see him, you know, getting to everybody, not on this racetrack.
I strongly disagree with his selection, but he might feel better about his selection knowing that I disagree with it.
Well, certainly...
I like King for a Day, believe it or not. I thought it over. I was originally going to pick Mucho Gusto. I think King for a Day, the way he won last time, I really liked him in his last race, the Pegasus, and he was right on maximum security and ran him down. And the truth of the matter is, despite the stumble, based on his lofty reputation and his accomplishments, maximum security, in theory, should have fended off King for a Day at odds of 1-9. He did not. And King for a Day is rising right now. So he's going to give you everything he has. We now know he can handle the track. We know he has tactical speed. He's got the rail. He's in a good spot. But look, we know that. I think they're going to try to put on a show with maximum security. So I'm so excited to see how this develops. Will he be able to shake loose? Will he just run them off their feet? Or will it become a dogfight? I think if it's close, but if maximum security, let me put it this way. I don't think maximum security is going to win a close decision. If he wins, I think he's going to dust him. If it's within like a length, I don't think maximum security wins. If he wins, he's going to win by three or more, in my opinion. And if it's close at the eighth pole, I do not see him fighting off King for a Day and or Mucho Gusto. That's just my feeling from just, you know, going into the race. Needless to say, I'll wipe all that out of my mind and call it as I see it. And that's the best part about being an announcer, is you get to celebrate the victories, no matter who it is or how it unfolds. And you don't go in with preconceived thoughts, which, look, everything changes immediately. When we had Timeline in there, in the early stages, you knew Timeline was finished within five jumps. So it all depends on how the race unfolds. I think Maximum Security got a good post. I know Bob Baffert thought he got a great post. Bob didn't want Maximum Security on the outside like that. It would be my interpretation of the way he responded to that draw. He's feeling that Maximum Security is going to run huge.
Well, it was Baffert that was, you know, that was way ahead of the curve when it came to noting how dangerous Maximum Security was going to be going into Derby. I mean, I was standing there in Santa Anita, I mean, minutes after he wins it, and people say, you know, are you the favorite? And he says, no, Gary and Mary's other horses. I mean, he, from word go, kept stressing that this is a serious, dangerous horse. And the fact that he's still in that frame of mind actually telegraphs things. It's interesting to hear you put it in those terms.
I'm excited about this race, and the whole country is. And it's a big moment because the three-year-old picture is completely open at this point. Who's going to be the three-year-old champion? No one has a clue at this point. And the leader of that division is going to be determined in the coming weeks, and it might just happen tomorrow afternoon.
Well, I said, it's funny, I said to both Jerry and Randy, I said, who's your leader in the clubhouse and who's your prospective champion in January? And they were unable to come up with a firm answer. You know, you literally, if you were to take a poll right now, you'd have probably six or seven different answers.
I would have to just go to E from the old Scantron.
All of the above.
Yes.
I love it. Well, in addition to the feature and, you know, obviously the highlight of the season here at Monmouth, a good eclectic card. Fields are not enormous, but they're dotted with stars and they're dotted with, you know, some very competitive races. The race, Frank, that is not getting the attention that it deserves. I mean, the fact that Midnight Bisou is going to be here and is here has got people excited to see her. However, the Monmouth Cup, I thought, was kind of a handicap division version of the Haskell. Seven horses and very competitive.
I like this race a lot. It's very exciting. It's a mile and eighth, so Colfront's going to get a serious test for distance. The number four horse, my lovely bride without paperwork, has been trying to tell me over and over again how to say his name. I'm hoping to get it correct in the race. Monongahela. Monongahela.
Monongahela.
We were doing exercises last night with Monongahela. And then we went to a phone a friend, the great Chris Andrews, whose book I need to absolutely endorse on the radio here, which is called, what are the three words of that? I know it's a three-word book, Then One Day. Excellent book by Chris Andrews of the South Point. But she texted him in a phone a friend deal, and he grew up right around there and clarified the pronunciation once and for all. Look, I'm not trying to make this a Red Oak show, but what's wrong with Bal Harbour here for a minor upset in this spot? But before I even mention that, Bal Harbour's younger brother in the second race is the bankroll builder of the day at odds of 4-5. One of my favorite prices. You look for 380 instead of 360. And his little brother, Bal, what's his name? Bal Bay Drive. That horse won't lose early in the day. This is a very competitive race. I'm going to give a slight nod to Bal Harbour. I'm against Colfront in here. Maybe he's too classy for them, but I just think that extra furlong might be a little tough for him.
Interesting.
How about you?
I kind of struggled. I was a Monongahela fan, and I needed him.
Very familiar phrases.
I needed him for the cross country pick five in February. Was that? Yeah, that was in February in the Campbell, and he could not get by bonus points, and that was horrific.
And so
that depressed me a little bit, but I've been a fan of this horse, even when Kelly Ruby had him, and he had been sort of treading water a little bit, those first couple of months with service, and then took the step forward in the Islin, and of course, being here and galloping over the track regularly doesn't hurt. I thought this was a really fun race, and you're not wrong about Bal Harbour being having a bit of a look. But I mean, there's even Lou Linder with Moongate Warrior is a horse that likes to cash checks on a regular basis.
These park shippers over the years are so solid here at Monmouth. Do not disregard park shippers here at any level. I'm telling you that even in the claiming races, when you see a Parks horse that's running for 12-5, running here for 20, they're alive many times. That is a formula without any science behind it that I can tell you I've watched on numerous occasions. Some of these Parks horses, they don't only run off the screen at Parks. They come here and they do very well. So I respect horses like that. An honest horse like him, 14 wins, in good form. Just disregard the fact that it was, believe it or not, May of 2018 that he was claimed for $5,000. Look what he's done since then. So that's a good horse. I like the two that ran 1-2, Monongahela and Bal Harbour. I'll give the nod to Bal Harbour. Just, he was half the price. This is his third start off the break. He can easily win this race. But the way Monongahela beat him, it's going to be hard to turn those tables, but you get a much better price on Bal Harbour, I would believe.
In between the Monmouth Cup and the Haskell, there is the Matchmaker. Thoughts in there?
Yes, I really believe that competition of ideas is vulnerable, and the reason is she took two vicious L's when she fired against a very talented filly that everyone in the country seemingly picked last week against her stablemate and Sister Charlie. And I just think that this horse is going to be 3-5, and there are other alternatives, particularly the new arrival, Touriga. Very interesting when Grand Motion brings a horse like this. This is the profile I love to see international shippers. Dark Artist loves this course, and she ran two very powerful races over it last year. Valedictorian is very honest and loves the course as well. I think it's Touriga and or Dark Artist. I think this is a race where a lot of people are going to single, and it's not going to be as easy as it looks on paper. Of course, competition of ideas is a major threat. But I do not think the price will be fair in any way, shape, or form. And I think she is a vulnerable target, not on her form, but just based on the fact that sometimes when you have such tough races like she has the last two, that might have taken a little starch out of her because they were both winning performances. That's just a theory of mine, and we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Turf Sprint, the Wolf Hill, 75,000, and this drew a nice field. And Jason Service, who actually at Saratoga today has got a Turf Sprint, a horse to, you got to make some decisions about turf sprinting, and he just seems to really, he does a lot of things well, but the turf sprinting side of it, whether it's moving one from the main to the turf or cutting them back, I mean, he, when he identifies a horse that he thinks is going to be good going short in a long dash, they generally excel. He's got, you know, a pretty clear favorite in here when it comes to where'd it go? There we go.
Fig Jelly.
Yeah, Fig Jelly.
I've never been a big fan of Fig Jelly, believe it or not. I've never just been, he never warmed me up. I remember it was first time Jason Service back last year. And our Equibase man, Rich Feldman, great handicapper. That was his single of the day. And he won. But I remember telling Rich afterward, I go, that wasn't the way I expected him to win, which you should never hold a win against a horse. But it wasn't that dramatic improvement. I don't like him in the spot. I like the rail. Legal Image is my selection.
I was just negotiating with Cassidy his visit.
The best. Is he smiling? Is Cassidy smiling?
He is smiling. It's an upset.
When he smiles, it's the greatest. I like when he's smooth.
He says, thanks for getting up early today, by the way.
Yeah. Listen, you know, look, I got to, I'm just kind of getting ready. I'm coming up to the Haskell. just coming into my own. I'm supposed to peak tomorrow at about 5:47. I've got to time this to write.
He had a slow gallop this morning. Maybe tomorrow morning they're going to blow him out a little, you know, do a little Jason Service blowout pre-race.
That's it. One of those little trots back and forth and huff and puff up to the booth. And there's only seven steps or so walking up to that booth. It's a good deal.
What do we do here in the Wolf Hill?
I'm going to the rail. Regal Image. He proved he could sprint last time out. He's got some tactical speed. I think he breaks well, sits right on the rail, waits for room, and takes care of business. Nick Juarez.
I love Nick Juarez, and he, if he wasn't posted on the rail, he'd find his way to the rail because he is a rider that, a young rider that likes to save ground. Molly Pitcher, obviously, Midnight Bisou is going to be pennies on the dollar. Anybody in there that can, that if, you know, if people want to try to leverage anything to tie in?
I've always been a fan of Electric Forest. I don't know if she could beat her, but if anyone does, I think it would be her. I like her to take a vicious L in the late stages to Midnight Bisou, who seemingly always gets there. But Electric Forest, lightly raced, beautiful filly. When she fires, she's good. Why can't she be a clear second here? I don't see why not.
Well, Frank, it should be, you know, even under the, you know, the watch of the heat, looking like a terrific day here at Haskell Monmouth. And before I wrap, Rick Hammerly is going to join us next, by the way. And
congratulations to Rick Hammerly. He's going to a great spot. I spent four glorious years at Oaklawn. He will not meet nicer people than in the city of Hot Springs. And I'm very happy for him because I'm sure that he's excited. I read his quotes. And look, Rick is a Monmouth graduate. I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to work with him. What were the odds that he would be at Oaklawn one day and I would be at Santa Anita? That would have been a good future book odds at about 7,000 to 1. And you just never know how life takes its turns. But Rick's going to do a great job for them.
Agreed. Before we go, though, I wanted you to add to the chorus of praise and appreciation for Bob Fortas. Gary West joined us earlier, and of course Marcus on Wednesday, and you had what seemed like a warm reminiscence about Fortas.
No question. First of all, I wish that Bob, may he rest in peace, would have had the privilege of seeing the response that has come out from every direction about him. I was very impressed with so many beautiful tributes for him because he was a very hard worker. When I was calling the race at Louisiana Downs, I started there in 2000, and in 2001, 2, and 3, I worked. One year I called 7 weeks of fairgrounds, and then 1 year I just worked in the press box, and 1 year I worked with Mervyn Muniz in his racing office, and I spent a lot of time in the press box. And I can tell you this, Marcus Hirsch and Bob Fortas were very close friends. They had a lot of fun, and the rest of us always felt it was us against Marcus and Bob in that press box. It was quite an environment. Chad Schechtschneider was running the press box one of those years, Joel Cunningham. Bob had a very good sense of humor, and I also annoyed him quite a bit. I actually put that on a Facebook post for Jim Mulvihill because he would just get aggravated at some of the things we'd be talking about, and probably rightfully so. But I know one of the things that made him laugh all the time is that we were talking about betting on college football, and I told him I always bet on rice because I like to eat rice, and I figure that's good. So every day he would come into the press box and let me know if rice covered or not. And so we just kind of had a good laugh about that. And then there were things that I would sometimes suggest to him maybe for his call, and his favorite line was, "My readers don't care about blank." So it was almost like I could have said, "Let's talk about the risen star," and he would be on autopilot to tell me that his readers didn't care about because I gave him so many topics that his readers clearly, in his opinion, wouldn't have cared about. But he cared about his readers. He was a perfectionist. He worked hard. And listening to him and Marcus banter back and forth when they were handicapping, they had certain expressions for trainers, for Andrew May. They had a sound that would go throughout the press box that we all knew in there. And it was quite an environment, and he had a good sense of humor. He was nice to me. We had mutual respect, and we had some good laughs. Most of his laughs were in a sarcastic way, but I made him laugh quite a bit, and vice versa. I just wish that he was, you know, like when I read the thing that he didn't want a service or he didn't want any kind of memorial, that was vintage Bob. But he deserved to know how well respected he was, and that's the thing that I came away with after seeing all of the comments and all of the tributes to him. It's like, man, it would have been interesting to see. I never saw Bob in an emotional state, but that would have been very emotional for him to see how well respected he was. And he deserved it because he was a hard worker and very talented. So that's what I took away from that. And I certainly feel bad for what happened to him. And it's just terrible. And he was a good guy.
Thank you, Frank. I'm glad this overlapped to have that opportunity. And I literally, you know, could go months here and have guests that cross paths. Like you said, there's been a real outpouring as the news spread. Late Tuesday. Well, yeah. I will see you later this afternoon. I do have to report on one dining experience that didn't involve pizza. However, semolina in Red Bank, out of this world. I mean,
I saw your post and it immediately went on my target. It's on my to-do list.
There was, I mean, just the agnolotti that I had, the sauce, it wasn't, you can't even call it a sauce. It was sweet corn with some scallion and I mean, just an ethereal dressing for the pasta and everything's, all their pasta is done daily in house. And the menu changes virtually daily. Fascinating. Really exceptional, and I mean nobody's going to be able to get in, I don't think, tonight or tomorrow night if you're going to be down here, but put it on your list. Semolina, and of course Red Bank, a little jewel, just one of the many little jewels up and down the shoreline.
Stop at Rockefeller's, not too far away on Prospect and Long Branch. It won't hurt you. You'll be happy.
We went by yesterday, actually. We drove by yesterday, as it happens, and that place next to it, the Butcher Block, supposed to be good.
As a matter of fact, I've heard great things about that Butcher Block.
And a buddy of mine, it's his family, and he is so excited. And he had told me that they make pizza, and he's wanting me to come down and try it. I have not done so yet, but we had extensive talks about the cheese and style, and I'm overdue to get them. I've heard great things about it. It's packed every night, evidently, and they serve the legendary Keith's ravioli. So we got to try that.
There we go. All right. We've been feathering in the dining pushes. There is no shortage of fabulous eating up and down the shore. Frank, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me via telephone. I'll learn better. I'll be early next year.
Frank Miramati, everybody, the one and only Merriman. We'll stay right here. As we've been saying, just too much going on. Rick Hammerly was in the news yesterday, and it was a press release that received acclaim nationwide, industry-wide. Rick, congratulations. Going to Hot Springs to join the team at Oak Lawn Park.
Well, thanks, Dave. It was a slow news day. I got one little piece I want to play. Which little elf scout fellow there. But it was a slow news day yesterday, so we got a little play. But as you know, been kind of working this out for the last few weeks. And tell you, I've almost been really overwhelmed and by all the wonderful comments and encouragement by people on Twitter land. And the texts and phone calls I got yesterday was very humbling, and it's great. It's great for me. I think it's going to be great for Oak Lawn, and I can't think of a better place for me to land. So sometimes good things happen when you wait. All my advisors and friends have been telling me just calm down, everything's going to be fine, which I finally heeded their advice. And so I'm just thrilled to go to Oakland for a number of reasons. First and foremost, it's quietly been around for a long time, making a lot of noise and really headed in the right direction. And the people that I met when I've been there, I was there about 3 weeks ago. I mean, it just from Mr. Sella on down to Wayne Smith and the racing guys Jed and Pat, they really love the game and they really want to do the right thing by the horsemen and the horses and the fans as well. I mean, the expansion going on there, they're building a casino which is already open right now, and they're putting in six new barns. They all they talk about is how this is going to help racing and help the horses and help help the game there in town. And I know you've been there a little bit. I haven't been there for years, and it's been through there passing through. I've never heard a bad word about the place. Everyone tells me you're just going to love it. You're going to love the town. You're going to love the people. And the best description I got was, hey, during the racing season, you're going to pull in to get some gas, and somebody's going to say, who do you like in the fifth? I said, you know what? That's my kind of town. So very thrilled. For another reason, I've been in California for a while here now, coming back, a little too long. I'm not used to being in one place that long. I worked on the West Coast, Del Mar, Golden Gate, Santa Anita, and I worked on the East Coast with the Monmouth and the Meadowlands and in Florida. But I've never worked in the Midwest, and so it's going to be a different ballgame for me. I'm looking at it as a new adventure, new things to learn, new people, new trainers, owners, everything. So I'm just going there. I feel privileged to be able to go and, kind of start over and kind of give up my view of things and, to help out any way I can. It's a perfect way for me to head in. I'm the position's called racing coordinator, which basically means I'm going to go in there and try not to mess things up. So they got such a great product going, and help any way I can get to know their way of doing things and see where it goes from there. But I just can't thank everyone enough. I was thinking back to when I first got let go in November, at the end of November last year, and, you know, getting through it, you know, Eagle Buster, oh, man, you know, kind of down in the dumps a little bit. And again, Gary Young had his little annual Christmas party. And it's like the first time it's like 3 weeks, mid-December, and first time I'd come out and seen anybody. And everyone's, oh. And Mike Smith was there, and he goes, man, sorry to see you go. He goes, you know where you got to go? You got to go to Oakland. And I'll never forget he said that. I thought about, that's pretty wild. And at that time, I wasn't thinking about going anywhere. But ever since he said that, it kind of stuck in the back of my head. And, you know, lo and behold, sometimes things work out. So, you know, very happy to be there. You know, I do want to thank a lot of people at various other facilities that reached out to me early on when I was jobless in January and February and offered me some things out there. I really wasn't ready to come back at that time, but they know who they are, and I really appreciate you, everybody, reaching out. And I have enjoyed my time off. I will say, I can't, like you, Steve, and like most of the people out there listening who have just overwhelmed me with your good thoughts. And so it's to thank you. And I got a couple of good comments saying, I wonder if Oakland has a calendar. Well, I'm going to find out if Oakland has a calendar. If they do, I'm going to start sending them out. I'll tell you that. But, it's been great. So, I think, you know, just walking in there, like I said, they're going to come out with a stake schedule, or I guess you could say we're going to come out with a stake schedule here very soon. I think you're going to be, it's a very dynamic stake schedule. You're going to see it and just go, wow. And I think that's what they're looking for there. And, try and raise their profile a little bit. I think it's pretty evident that the Midwest, Kentucky, Oakland included, has really taken a step forward as far as prominence goes in the game now. Purses help, but a lot of real good horsemen, obviously, in that vicinity. And I think with the purses and the lifestyle, meaning the affordability of staying there, it's really gonna be more prominent. And it has, maybe they'll stay, a lot of them will stay home more, which I've seen, maybe not going to New York or not sending as many to New York, and the same thing with not maybe sending more horses to California, staying home there in that region. And it's really become strong, and I think it's just going to get stronger in the year. So I'm great, and I tell you what, I think I'm going to have to rent a big place because of half the people that said they're going to come to visit. I'm going to have a place for them to stay, that's for sure. So. I know you've been there, and you as well were just one of the people that just couldn't say enough about it, and that is quite a different tune than what I'm used to out here in California. A lot of knockers out here and this and that, but I love my time here, but time to move on.
Well, it's been quite notable how many people included in their reaction to the news, Rick, that it's just another kind of indication of the savvy management of Oakland. They see an opportunity to bring someone of your experience and from an A track, not that Oakland isn't already an A track, but it is seasonal. I mean, it is a specific seasonal venue. So some of the things that they seem to have in their long-term plans to have someone like you, involved in the strategy and the execution, it's to their benefit, and it shows a lot of foresight on their part.
Well, that's what I meant. I think it's going to be a good match for both of us. I mean, obviously, I'm going to learn a lot from the way they do things. I mean, they're kind of like the Pittsburgh Steelers of horse racing. I mean, throw that in there. I mean, just the ownership's been there for, the Sella family's been owned the track for over 100 years, and and the management, the people that work there have been there for years. There's not a lot of turnover, and, you know, I'm certainly not used to that. So I'm personally going to appreciate that. And like you said, on the other hand, you know, maybe there's some things that, I can suggest to them to, you know, that'll help, you know, raise their profile nationally and you know, increase the handle. I've already tried to introduce a few things to them. And so it's going to be a good match. I might also add as well that I got one more little gig that I'm going to be doing too, is I'm going to be working at, Kentucky Downs for their little 5-day meet that actually runs for, you know, about 2 weeks. So, Ted Nicholson, who's, went to school together and have been a friend, called me and said, "Hey, why don't you come out here?" And, originally we talked about being a steward, but, and that was kind of a one-way talk, cause I'm not a steward type of guy, but, it's not in my, you know, it's not my deal. So I said no, and he said, "Well, why don't you come out anyway?" I said, "What do you want me to do?" He said, "Yeah, you can just put out fires. You help Tyler, help me, and, you know, kind of do whatever needs to be done." So I said, "Perfect, that's great." So I'm really, once I realized that I'm going to go to Kentucky Downs in Oakland, I said, "Well, I'm really simplifying my life. One's turf only, one's dirt only. This is perfect. Half the headache. It's wonderful." So pretty interesting there. So I'd be glad to go out there and kind of get, once again, meet some new people, get the feel of the Midwest, and do that. We're not gonna move. We're gonna stay here. But, you know, it's gonna be like the old days. You know, throw the stuff in the back of the car and go get a job and get out there and hit the road. So very anxious to do that part of it and you know, new adventure.
Well, very excited for you. Hammer, Drew Cuoto is going to join us in just a couple of minutes, but let me see if you got anything from the opening. We talked on Wednesday when Delmar was getting ready to pop, and a couple of good days of racing. Of course, yesterday I reported, you know, live on air just about 24 hours ago, the really sad circumstance, the multiple horse accident with the loose horse of Carla Gaines's, and knock on wood, Asa Espinoza okay. But from a racing standpoint, in the afternoons, two good days. Anything that has come your way, or anything to look forward to this weekend that caught your eye?
Well, we mentioned Alfredo Marquez is kind of a quiet guy that might have a good meet. Yep. He ended up having a winner on the first day. I want to follow up on something we talked about during the end of the Santa Anita meet. Another trainer, 2-year-old trainer, Louis Mendez, that we said to keep an eye on him. He works for John Brogglebank, and they're set up in Utah. These horses come in live. I saw he won one yesterday, and it perked me up. I said, I got to remind everybody. Their horses are ready to roll in the 2-year-old race. Let's see, he has a couple in on Saturday and tomorrow. So don't worry about him. That's all they run is the 2-year-olds right now. They get them ready. They come to town and they're ready to run. So don't forget about him. You know, I've got to pick against Steve Bick, don't I? I got to beat Steve Bick.
Yes. Yes.
So that's what they say. I saw that. That's great. I mean, that's a good gig. So we got a lot of people out there trying to beat you. Who would I go with? I said just to be actually like your selection a little bit. I like a couple horses in there. Was this is on Saturday, right?
Yes.
On the San Clemente. I like a little bit of a Maxim right there, and I like Mike McCarthy's horse. Overemphasized.
Yep. That's my backup. That's my alternate.
In that spot, so good for you. And the Wicker, well, I haven't looked at Sunday yet, but you know, that'll be good. Now Delmar, hopefully they get off. They're doing their little take a race a day off. You know, there's only 8 races on Sunday, so they'll be fine there. You know, one thing I did want to mention that got a lot of reaction too, while I was out a couple weeks ago, when I sent out the picture of Sir Barton.
Yes,
in from Miami. Now you talk about a crazy. Just a wild thing, and you know, we're driving up from from Denver up to Buffalo, Wyoming to see some friends, and we're driving up, and I mean, we went through this hellacious hailstorm. It was funny because we're driving, and you could see the big red dot heading right to the road, and I looked at Gina, and I said, what do you want to do? She goes, let's go. I said, of course we're going to go. All the cars are pulled to the side of the road. Here we are. It's a rental. You know, who cares? And this stuff, I'm telling you, it was unbelievable. It was like baseballs hitting your car, and we're driving, and boom, 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 boom. So we got through the first one, and she goes, what do you think? I go, you know, let's pull over and wait for the next one to go. And we're pulling over. She's reading the tour book about what's near us, which kind of that's how we rolled. And all of a sudden she goes, you know that Sir Barton is buried in Douglas? I go, what are you talking about? I look at the map. Douglas is like 20 miles away. And, it's like, well, we got to go. Of course we got to go. So we pull off in this little town and drive through town, and there's this little park there, and, you know, pull off. And sure enough, there's a statue of this horse on this hill. And they have a little park, and they have the Kentucky Derby Pavilion and the Preakness Pavilion and the Belmont Pavilion. And lo and behold, this beautiful place on this hill with flowers around it is this perfect statue of Sir Barton out there in Wyoming. And I sent it out and got quite a reaction. So, and then I had to get the book because Jennifer, texted back in and said she hadn't even been there. She said, she was pleased to see that. So I did get the book. And so now I'm going to read Sir Barton. So anybody that's driving between Denver and Northern, Wyoming, there's not a sign on the road, not a little historical marker. You have to want to go there, but, pretty wild story about how we ended up there. Buried, and it really have to pull off and see it if you're there. So been busy during the time off, and now I'll get geared up and get ready to go back to work, Steve. And I'm glad you're at Monmouth enjoying it. Wish I was there, but I think we'll see up in Saratoga in a couple of weeks if all goes well.
Excellent Hammer. Can't say more how delighted I am and everybody is with this development yesterday. Rick Hammerly, part of Oaklawn Park. And how early will you have to get there, actually, now that I think about it? Probably
December? I'm really not sure. Sometime around the first part of the year. We've been doing some other stuff over the phone. And obviously when the condition books come out, busy circulating those. And so, the meet starts, last year was the first year they moved the meet a little shifto, which was a good thing, to avoid some of the inclement weather and the freezing temperatures in mid January. So the meet starts on January 24th and then ends on Derby Day. So it was a good shift, that way.
Cool.
I added some races there. So I'll get there early part of the year. And like I said, I'll be going back into Kentucky Downs and find something else to keep busy. But, it was a nice wait. It's something that most people don't get to do. Take a little break in their working career. I mean, it was great. I mean, if anybody can do it. Because guess what? The world still goes on without you. And, boy, I'm fresh. I mean, watch out. I mean, I'm ready to go. I mean, we did a lot of traveling, did a lot of stuff. But, I mean, to be able to say, so, as it turned out, everybody told me, and they were right. They ended up doing me a favor by getting me out of there and making me get a little break. So, staying on your show is what kept me going. Each week it's like, hey, I got to keep up. Got to go in there and,
nice.
I know what I'm doing, what I'm talking
nice.
About. So it's a pleasure for that. And it's great to hear from the people, and we'll keep up doing. And if we can get them calendars or whatever we can do for them while down there in Oakland, we'll do it. And that's it. And so thanks to everyone once again, and I'm glad to be back.
Rick Hammerly, and there was never a doubt that he was threatening to maybe do something different, but I had every confidence that he'd stay right where he belongs. We're going to stay right here where we belong too. As I said, this is just too big of a weekend, and there've been too many things, both hard news and racing news, and the two collide with our next guest. Drew Cuoto joins us, who is representing Jerry Hollendorfer in what is now legal proceedings. Didn't want to have to come to this, but but it has. And, Drew, good morning. I appreciate the visit.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. I appreciate the, I appreciate you coming on because you guys have been so professional, and you know Jerry has been so respectful of really of the game at large, the kind of person that he is, and you know didn't without rancor, without any animosities, you know has really, I think, conducted himself like a real gentleman when, you know, some people were saying to take the gloves off and you know, to get, you know, very aggressive and so forth. Talk a little bit about your conversations with him on obviously a daily basis and the way in which you guys have chosen to approach getting Jerry back where he belongs on the backstretch, sending horses out in his name.
Sure. Jerry loves this business. He loves horse racing. He loves the horses, and he's very respectful of his peers, of the horse racing board, of the industry at large, and his, despite the fact that he is in the most difficult, untenable, inexplicable situation, he doesn't want to really create a problem for anyone else and deal with it as it's his problem. He's taking responsibility with it, and he wants to deal with it himself and not subject others to it. So that's the starting point for the way in which Jerry has handled it, not to bring in and expose anybody else to his trauma. I said, Jerry loves this industry. Really, I've known him for over 40 years, and he was a very dear friend of my brother's. They were very close, and I was fortunate to be sort of the little brother around them, and Jerry's treated me exceptionally well throughout my life, and I know him like few other folks know him, and he really loves three things in life. He loves his wife, Janet, dearly. He loves his horses dearly, and the people who work for him and with him are his three greatest loves in life. And the owners who are loyal to him, he's tried to put the interest of those folks, his employees and the owners who are with him, first and foremost in every decision he's made throughout this process. So I commend him for that.
Well said. The process, there's really no benefit to rehash what transpired that led to this. I mean, you can incorporate it in any portion of the discussion, but let's give everybody the up-to-date portion of the story from yesterday, about 24 hours ago. You went to court in San Diego, and the Superior Court judge basically, asking for some time to absorb the complexities of the circumstance, because there's no technical reason for Jerry Hollenorfer not to be operating as he has for decades. He's got no suspension. His license isn't at in jeopardy or at risk or, you know, under any notice. You talk about the court process and what went on yesterday and your expectations coming up in, what, another 10 days or 8 days or so?
Right, next Friday, a week from today. Now, we were all grateful to Judge Frazier for, as he said, recognizing this was not a garden variety ex parte motion and that it was exceedingly substantive, is I think what he said. So he was fearful of making what he described as a hasty decision, so he asked if the parties would have any problem with him delaying this a week, give him a chance to really assess the moving papers, the opposing papers, and the law involved, and then be prepared to discuss it in a meaningful way next Friday. So we were grateful for that. The delay is very difficult on Jerry. This process has been going for almost a month now since he was asked to leave Santa Anita. But at the same time, he was grateful in the caution that Judge Frazier took in not coming to a hasty conclusion. There was no way he could have read all of the documentation that was submitted by all of the parties involved and been prepared yesterday. So we very much appreciated that.
Well, and so essentially, it's a period for him to evaluate the materials. And from Jay Privman's piece at DRF, Jay attended the hearing. 200 pages submitted on your behalf, and 100 from the other side. So he'll basically read the documentation and either grant a restraining order or deny a restraining order. Is that fair?
Typically, what the process is that they review the pleadings and issue what's called a tentative ruling to give the parties an idea of where the court is leaning, and then you will have an oral argument to address whatever has been raised in the tentative ruling and persuade the judge one way or another at that point. And he may then stay with the tentative ruling, or he may take it under consideration or change the tentative ruling. So that's typically what happens at the motion hearing, and I expect will occur next week.
We should also note that the CTT, which has undergone a complete tack shift, including new leadership, and Owen Hardy, is come out in support. It took some time for that to happen. Drew, let's shift gears toward those that have been supportive, and I know that Jerry. I certainly volunteered to have him visit. I understand why he and how he has to pick the opportunities and essentially is just being quoted, and I understand that. But speak for Jerry if you would as to those that have tried to help him and support him. Certainly HBPA and the THA on July 4th with, I thought very timely support from this side of things. Who's been a help to you guys?
That's a great point. One, I want to start with the CTT. They have been very supportive of Jerry. And I thought they took a courageous step in joining him as a co-plaintiff in the action. And our sense is that they understand very much the risk and danger of allowing racetracks to exclude anyone, trainer, owner, anyone, for whatever reasons, despite a lack of merit or justification, if those reasons suit what the racetracks believe is a PR win for them or poses a PR risk to them. And we would hope, as licensees, all of us, that there is some form of due process, whether that's full-blown due process or fair procedure before they do that. So we're very thankful to the CTT for stepping up and being very supportive. And I do want to, as you just mentioned, I do want to thank the HBPA and the THA for their statements. They echoed that sentiment from the get-go. They've been very supportive from the outset, as have been local HBPAs like the Arizona HBPA. They have been behind the scenes encouraging and offering support. They, in fact, passed a bill a week after Jerry was excluded. There was a bill signed in Arizona that mandates that no trainer or owner can be removed from a racetrack without due process, and it was timely. It was amazingly timely, so commend them. So, and then there have been tremendous support from trainers behind the scenes, and not surprisingly, many of them have said, they are afraid to come out publicly because they feel they're a small operation, and they feel that they could be next. And that's they are legitimately concerned. And some of those folks that have said that are household names who fear that there could be retribution, and that's not hyperbole. That's actual representations made to us by people who you would suspect would not feel that way, but they do feel that way. They feel if they come out publicly. So when someone like John Sadler makes the kind statements and supportive statements he made 2 days ago about Jerry, you know, that's a brave thing for trainers to do, and we were grateful for him to do that.
Well, and Doug O'Neill with me the other day.
Doug O'Neill. And you know, I apologize for not recognizing Doug, but for individuals like that, for trainers like that who have significant interest in the game and some risk, for them to make those statements is a very bold and brave thing, and we appreciate it. Jerry's very proud to be their colleague and thankful for their support.
Well, Drew, I'm not going to dive into, you know, the whys and wherefores of you know, of what transpired from December until May. It you know, there'll be another time for that, I suppose. I mean, the unfairness and the capricious nature of this and the scapegoating involved in this is so preposterous and unacceptable. And, you know, why there has not been more widespread condemnation of the Stronach Group for a variety of reasons, but this particular circumstance is just... to me, it's disheartening, and you know, TOBA and the TOC, and you know, if people don't understand what a threat this is to anyone, any stakeholder that has, you know, has a role in the day to day, you know, life of the sport, you need to wake up. Because this is not an answer to any of the concerns and long-term requirements for the game's, you know, for the game's existence. Trying to exclude someone like Jerry Hollendorfer, and they're not going to get away with it when the dust settles.
No, I mean, there's a principle that a racetrack can't exclude an individual under certain circumstances, and I don't think we argue with that. The problem that we have is, to date, the Stronach Group has not once met with Jerry before this occurred, never explained to him what their perceptions were about any shortcomings he had. We're not aware of the bases on which these decisions are being made, other than the fact that the Stronach Group issued a ban, and that ban has created PR risks for certain other racing associations, primarily Del Mar, where the situation in New York, there was not a ban issued. That was a decision Jerry made so as not to create problems for his owner back there or for the racing department. So there was no ban issued in New York. So it's very difficult for Jerry and for his representation to try and get our arms around this when there's been no disclosure coming back to us on the basis of these actions. And that's the very difficult situation he's in. That's why he's so frustrated. He's prepared. Jerry's not one to shy away from responsibility. He's prepared to talk substantively about any issues related to what happened from December forward. He's prepared to open up records, discuss with people, go through it. But if you look at his record, this man's been exceedingly safe for many years before this. You know, I've read the press reports. Del Mar says he wasn't involved in any breakdowns for at least 4 years, no equine fatalities for 4 years. Santa Anita, he had one in 573 starts in the prior 2 years. The fairs have said no accidents for at least 3 years at least. understand nothing at Los Alamitos. So these incidents seem to have occurred at TSG tracks. And for a number of reasons that people are well aware of, there were lots of problems with the TSG track at Santa Anita. And we're happy to sit down in a professional setting and go through each incident with them or an independent hearing officer and go through it. Jerry will take responsibility for anything, but he will, you know, none of us would be scapegoated for incidents for which we are not responsible. So Jerry is a responsible horseman. His record reflects that. So no one's getting a chance to talk about that. No one's willing to talk about that. We are.
Well, well done. And whatever you need communicated, happy to have this forum for you. The horse players should recall all the number of times that he's been on this show anyway and in other settings. He on a regular basis, would end visits by saying thank you to the horse players who make the game possible. He may be, you know, for a certain period, he was the only trainer that was doing that on a regular basis, cognizant of horse players and, you know, cognizant of, you know, every aspect of, you know, what the, you know, what makes the game go. And, you know, he to have him singled out, you know, someone who is not necessarily media, you know, friendly and all that, you know, easy in front of a camera or a microphone, to me was particularly egregious. And I'm delighted to have you to, you know, to communicate his, you know, his feelings and his thoughts. And we're not letting this drop until this wrong is righted.
But Jerry, again, Jerry appreciates your support immensely, and I can't tell you how much that means to him. He wanted me to express that to you.
No, so. It's my pleasure.
Steve, if I could just add one thing. Sure. On a different subject, I just wanted to congratulate Hammer for his new position. Yeah. And he's a hardworking, honest guy, and I thought that's a great spot for him. And congratulations to the Oaklawn folks, Louis Sella. I think he'll be a wonderful addition to them as well.
There is no doubt.
That's the racing fan in me.
There is no doubt. And you know, because they love the racing, like, you know, like Keeneland and like Saratoga and you know, those places where, you know, where racing is treasured. And Saratoga, the Saratoga-Oaklawn connection is so, you know, so easy to make, but Hammer has that same, you know, enthusiasm, and so he's a perfect fit there. It's going to be a marriage made in heaven.
Agreed.
Well, Drew Cuoto, I appreciate this, and we will look forward to next Friday. And you know, it certainly wasn't fair that Del Mar got caught up in this maelstrom, but we'll see if the first step toward writing things starts there and goes forward.
It's a great point. We are disappointed that it's Del Mar on the other side, because both Jerry and I respect that group tremendously. They're a wonderful group, and it's unfortunate that the circumstances have developed the way they are, that they are the other side of this. And there's so much about this whole incident that's unfortunate, and that's just another one of the aspects of it.
Drew Cuoto, everyone, representing Jerry Hollendorfer, and we'll know more on Friday. And in the meantime, Dan Ward handling things, and you've seen, you know, some of the horses and other, you know, other people handling horses for Jerry's clients. Jonathan Wong, I see, has got some, and of course, back at Saratoga, back in New York, you know, the horses of Larry Best's. Don Chalos handling those, so we'll monitor this and provide updates as they come. Drew, have a great weekend. Best of luck next week, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much. You as well. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Drew Cuoto, everyone, handling Jerry Hollendorfer, who his first choice was not to, you know, not to sue. People were calling for it immediately, but he tried to do this, you know, politely and quote unquote behind the scenes. But this clearly became necessary. I appreciate Drew joining us.